soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
Turn it for Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, I always want you to hit us up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Soc, and Facebook, Soccer Matters. You can also find it at Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc. All right, the next segment is brought to you by one of my favorite spots in Houston. It is a FM kitchen and bar. It is north of Washington Avenue on Shepherd. You go in there, great craft cocktails, great craft food as well, fresh. I'm not one of these guys who likes to go to a place where you get only one or the other. At FM Kitchen and Bar, my good friends over there, you get both. You get the great craft cocktail you want, plus tremendous fresh food. I go with the chicken sandwiches, the kale salad, great burgers, you name it. Great spot. Huge outdoor patio area for dogs and the family. It is FM Kitchen and Bar, and they bring us our next interview. Great friend of the show joining us now from Acción Central America. You can catch him on Facebook and YouTube at those spots. He is the one and only Alex Benega, great friend of the show. Alex, how are you?
Hey, Glenn. Nice seeing you. Nice being here. Very, very happy to talking to you about soccer. Gold Cup is here. Euro just finished. Oh, my God. And now Olympics. Way to go, you know, for soccer fanatics, right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a crazy time right now. You're getting set to get on an airplane. You're going to Glendale, Arizona. You're going for the quarterfinals, which will be incredibly interesting between Qatar and El Salvador, Mexico and Honduras. All right, I want to take you right to El Salvador and the impression they've made under Hugo Perez in this Gold Cup right now. He's a name that everybody in the United States is very familiar with. But this was a very brave and bold El Salvador against Mexico.
Very, very brave El Salvador against Mexico. And let me tell you something. Hugo Perez, like you said, it's very well known in the United States, but also in El Salvador. You know, having roots in El Salvador, Hugo Perez was even mentioned right before Carlos de los Cobos got to El Salvador. So there has been a couple of times that Hugo Perez was mentioned in El Salvadorian Soccer Federation. Now we see a different El Salvador. Now we see a brave El Salvador. Second half with that Mexico game was just really amazing. And I think, listen, and I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here, and I'm not trying to say things out of just my mind, but I think if El Salvador can play Qatar the same way they played the second half against Mexico, they get a very, very good chance of beating Qatar. I mean, Qatar is a very well disciplined team. We've seen them playing against Honduras. You know, we've seen them playing against Grenada. And also, you know, we analyzing Qatar, it's a very well disciplined team. They don't lose their focus. They know what they're playing and they know who they're playing against. So it's going to be a really good game. Really, really good game.
Alex Benegas, Acción Central America. You can catch him on Facebook and YouTube. Appreciate him coming on the show. You know, knowing El Salvadorian football like I have, I played professionally against teams like FAS and Firpo and Alianza. I've been down there as a broadcaster in the Cuscatlan Stadium. I understand the local challenges of developing players. Where does this fit in the big picture, this success right now with the full National League? Could this ever jumpstart player development down there? Could this ever help improve a professional league? Tell me where we're at.
You know what? When Hugo Perez got to El Salvador, you know, I talked behind the scenes, you know, behind cameras with a very, very familiar person in the Salvadorian Soccer Federation. And one of the things that Hugo Perez proposed to Salvadorian football was, you know, developing, you know, minor leagues. Start seeing, you know, scouting, you know, in different teams from El Salvador. Not only the, you know, the ones we know, FAS, Aguila, you know, Alianza, but going, you know, inside small towns to see players, you know. So I think Hugo Perez has a big, big shot of really developing the Salvadorian soccer and take him somewhere, because as of now, El Salvador has only been a team that, you know, they compete, they do well one or two games, but that's it, right? I mean, they're not the start of the CONCACAF. They're, you know, sometimes they said, oh, well, they play well, but they lost. And now they're playing well and they're winning. You know, Qatar will be a very good chance of proving that. And to go back to your question, I think now it's a good time for El Salvador to start developing minor leagues.
Alex Benegas joining us here. Now, look, the only thing I will say to that is he could be the fire starter for this. Others have tried it before, but it will take investment. It will take, him politically to get things in a row so that he can get investment and support. Do you think that's possible in El Salvador?
That's the key, too, because now even the soccer league, the Salvadorian soccer league, the local league, you know, they've always had problems with the national team coach. Now they don't have that. You know, the local league is actually believing Hugo Perez. They're actually letting him know that, hey, you know, we're here to help. Whenever you want the players, just let us know. You know, we'll coordinate. We have to move games. We'll do it. So now there's a different environment. I don't know what changed. Ooh. But when Hugo Perez got to El Salvador, it's like everything started from zero, from scratch. And they believe in him. So that's a really, really a key for El Salvador to start developing good soccer.
Great point to bring in, Alex, and we appreciate it. Alex Benegas joining us, Acción Centro America. He will be going to Glendale for the quarterfinals. He will catch both the matches out there between Qatar and El Salvador, Mexico, and Honduras. All right, let's talk a little bit about your impressions of Honduras in this tournament. I know they have some injury problems. Albert Elias, Minor Figueroa heading into their quarterfinals. What can you tell us about Honduras, who, by the way, as you and I know as Houstonians, absolutely blew it out of the water at BBVA Stadium.
Yeah, amazing fans. Crowd at BBVA Stadium, you know. And you know what? Honduras has been one of those teams right before the tournament that said Honduras is going to get to the final. You know, we got to see Honduras at best. And I said, I even said it on the show. I said, look, I really believe, not because I'm Honduran, but I believe that they're playing good. They have a really good coach, and now it's a good time. Mexico is not playing well, so they have a very good chance of, you know, getting to the final. The U.S., unfortunately, they're not playing the best either. Panama, you know, it was not that strong team like we've seen Panama before. So I said, look, this is the only chance that Honduras will have to be in the final for Copa Oro, for Gold Cup. And now they have injuries, they have COVID cases, and this is something that we have to look into. You know, Honduras have had at least 5 COVID cases positive in the last week, at least 5 between players and coaching staff. So, you know, we really got to look into that. And not only COVID cases, but now they have injuries. 5 players got injured and could not participate in Gold Cup because of injuries. Last game against Qatar, we saw Minor Figueroa. We saw Romel Kyoto as well getting off the field with an injury. You know, both players, fortunately for Honduras coach, Fabian Coito, they will be available to play against Mexico. But it's something that we have to think about. What is it in the Honduras national team that is actually hurting the players? You know, they're being loaded with the physical activity and, you know, 3 hours of training every day. I mean, what is it that is really hurting the Honduran soccer team? Because we really got to look into it.
Alex Benegas joining us. All right, I want to take you to Albert Elias La Pantarita. And
yes, sir.
Well, first of all, how much credence do you put into this possibility of him going to West Ham United in the Premier League?
You know, back when he was here in Houston, you know, I said, I have a good relationship with the player and people around him. And you know, people were saying that he was going to different places. I said, look, I know he wants to play in a very good league, in a competitive league. He's not just going to leave to any team. I think now this is a good chance for him to be on a bigger platform. You know, he's a very fast player. You know, wherever he goes, obviously that's a plus for La Panterita. But I think now is the time for him. You know, now is the time for him, because this could actually be just a platform to get to a bigger team. You know, and this is the only chance he has.
So the season he had at Boavista, very, very good. He had 8 goals there. He adjusted very well to that league. I see some people sometimes very negative about Albert Elias. I don't know why, because he's incredibly ambitious. He's a wonderful young man. He brings a lot of talent. I don't get that. Is that Honduran fans themselves who go after Albert?
I can see why. You know, Albert Elias, he has many attributes, right? He's a very good soccer player. He's a nice guy, like you say. But here's the thing. to be a very good player, you don't just have to run after the ball. You know, you have to know where you are in the field. You have to actually study your opposite team. And this is something that we always said that Albert Ellis needs. He needs to just calm down, sometimes just get the ball. Instead of running, just look up and see who's around him. Not only just run with the ball, right? So, I mean, there's many things in soccer, just not running behind the ball.
But I want to stop you right there, because I think some of that improved when he was at the Dynamo. Oh, yes. He became, you know, he started to combine with people a little bit more. It wasn't just straight ahead. I thought some things began to change. I think that has gotten a little bit more polished in Portugal as well. But, you know, there's part of that chaotic nature to his game that is actually unpredictable, that I think if he came off the bench in a Premier League game with that type of pace, could cause problems for opponents.
A lot of headaches, you know, and that's a pro. Premier League has always been his goal, let me tell you that. And I know this for a fact, because obviously he at one point thought that going to Spain or even Italy was going to be really far away from him. But, you know, Premier League has always been on his radar. And even before he got to Houston, Premier League was on the radar. And now, you know, because of the fact that you just mentioned, the doors have just opened. You know, we see a different Albert Ellis. We see a more mature player. So that's a plus. We'll see, because now is the time. I think now is a good time for him to just leave to a bigger platform.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question again. I take you back. Do you think there's legitimacy to the West Ham opportunity?
It is. There's a big opportunity.
What do you know about it that you can tell us, Alex?
You know what? Not only West Ham. I think talking behind cameras, you know, with the people close to Albert Ellis, I know for a fact there were all other teams in, you know, that wanted Albert Ellis in the Premier League. West Ham is the one that says, hey, you know, we're ready. We're not asking too much of it from him. We know who he is. We know what he plays. We really want him, right? He was waiting for another proposal from another team. However, I think West Ham is the biggest and the strongest opportunity right now for him.
He also had some French league attention as well, correct?
Yeah, but he was not too – this is Alex Vanegas talking, not Ellis, right?
Sure.
But that I know he was not very interested in the French league. You know, he Premier League has always been like his goal. Let me tell you that. And he will fit very good. You know, even talking to him, you know, I talked to him and I said, look, don't, when he came from Monterrey, I talked to him. I said, look, let's not get ahead. Let's think this straight, because Premier League has always been in his radar. He always wanted to go to Premier League. So this is the time. This is the chance.
All right. So that was Alex Benegas. That's part one. We're going to come back with part two. But a quick word here for FM Kitchen and Bar. It's a neighborhood bar and restaurant. It's right in the heart of the Washington Corridor, the Rice Military area. I go over there all the time. Get a lot of lunch, take out there, sit on the picnic bench, bring my dog. They got a great expansive patio, large covered area, and tons of TVs and monitors for the best in soccer. Or sports in general. Catch Dynamo games over there, have the Euros over there. Outdoor beer garden. It's great for hosting large groups, happy hours, private events. Get over there. Here's the reason why. Great cocktails, and these are craft cocktails. You're going to get the drink that you want and you like. Over 25 beers on tap. A lot of Houston's favorite local breweries represented there. And then the great comfort food. So it's a combination of a great craft cocktail or beer, and then it's fresh food. Burgers, chicken sandwich, one of my favorites, a lot of great comfort food. 7 days of the week, it's the best spot to go to. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Get over there.
You can always get around fixing up that Pontiac till you can't.
ESPN 97.5.
Greg Berhalter. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, always hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock as well. All right, quick word here for Advantage BMW in Midtown. Now, I've driven one for years. I've leased, I've bought from Advantage. I love going down there. Justin takes care of me. Steven takes care of me. The drive of a BMW, as you know, it's like no other. I've had the 5 Series. I've been in the 3 Series. I've graduated up to the X5. I absolutely love it. I can throw things in the back. It is the ultimate driving machine. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW is the customer service. It's second to none. Advantage BMW, they're going to take you through the sales, service, and finance side of it. It can be done very easy. Get that luxury vehicle you want. Get that incredible ride. I get in my car. It just feels amazing the way this thing hugs the road and runs the streets of Houston. Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get that Houston hometown advantage. Go in there, see Justin, see Steven. They are proud sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Here's part two with Alex Benegas. Alex Benegas joining us. Acción Central America, a very, very focused guy when it comes to Central America. Excellent coverage, obviously, and we love having you on the program. When I compare him to Ramel Quioto, is the difference between Albert Elise and Ramel Quioto the discipline, the training habits, the seriousness with which he goes about his business? Because sometimes you look at Quioto and you go, with that physical attributes and that ability, you could be somewhere bigger.
Hey, but you know,
is it a mental thing?
It is a mental thing, and it's more of a discipline thing, you know, because they're both very good players. Ramel Quioto, we've always known, what happened to Ramel Quioto and how he is off the field, which is, you know, everybody can do with the personal life whatever we want, right? But when you're a pro player, you have to take care of yourself. And discipline is the main thing that separates Albert Elise from Ramel Quioto. And let me tell you something. Now that we mentioned Ramel Quioto, this has been a dream tournament for Ramel Quioto. Coming back to the Honduras national team, you know, he was not called right before Copa Oro. And now he's called again, and he wants to prove himself. He wants, even, you know, now seeing Albert Elise going to Europe and having all these proposals from European teams, now he also wants to leave the Europe. He wants to be, you know, in the radar for European teams. And this has been a very good tournament for Ramel Quioto. As a matter of fact, we see a different Ramel Quioto as a whole, you know, as a player, personally, you know, more disciplined, more humble even. So, you know, we never know. You know, we might see a Ramel Quioto in Europe very soon, too.
Talking to Alex Benegas. Alex, when I say Boniac Garcia and Minor Figueroa are national heroes, am I correct?
They are. They are. And Minor and Boniac have been very, talented players, but respected players amongst the Honduras national team. As a matter of fact, against Qatar and even against Panama, Boniac did his part for the Honduras national team to actually do a better game against Panama. And actually, when he got in against Qatar, we saw a different Honduras. Experienced Boniac Garcia, wanted to, you know, put the team on his back and actually was motivating the team to go forward, not just, you know, stay defending, the, you know. So we see a different Boniac, and it's actually very good, and I'm happy to see a very motivated Boniac Garcia.
We have been very fortunate to watch the professionalism of these two guys in Houston, which leads me to the next obvious question. And I've asked this to you a million times. I say this to a lot of people. I have my own opinions as to why it doesn't happen. But when that stadium is packed and we are showing off the blue of Honduras and it is full, with the knowledge that these two guys are playing for their club team here, Albert Elise has played here, Ramel Quioto, we can go on and on with Honduran players. Why don't they come to the games? I need to find out why. And I would also say there's got to be some responsibility in a very big way on the Dynamo organization when it comes to getting into that community and encouraging people to come to games.
I think that's the key. I think getting into that community, it's the key, because, you know, there was one time that we had, what, 4 or 5 players, Honduran players in the Houston Dynamo?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why the Hondurans the Honduran fans don't go and support it.
Come on, you're Honduran. You should know this, Alex. Sure, you got the key to unlock the box here.
But let me tell you something, and I was heading that way right now. There is a big part, and I'm not talking bad about the Houston Dynamo, not at all, but they got to get into the Central American community. There is a feeling, and this is what I hear from the fans. This is not Alex Vanegas. Mm-hmm. This is what I hear from the fans. They think that going to the stadium is very expensive. They think that they don't have enough Spanish things, going on in the stadium. Yep. They feel, and again, this is what the fans said. And the fans are saying.
Yeah, but this is great information. This is the type of thing that the organization needs to hear. And this is where I've been. It is ticket pricing. It is some of the other things. If you want to encourage these great fan bases there, and we want to get an atmosphere where I believe, just like probably you do, that we could be sold out every game. Why should Austin be celebrating all the good times? Why should Portland? This is a soccer city. We know this.
It is.
It needs to see itself out on the MLS side and with the MLS product.
And hey, not only Honduras, listen, we got a very good Salvadorian player playing with the Houston Dynamo.
Of course.
Darwin Serena. And why are not the Salvadorians going to the stadium?
So
there's got to be, if we link this to things, there's got to be something that the situation is, there's got to be something preventing them to go to the stadium. And one of the things is, I think the Houston Dynamo have to do a little bit more effort getting into their community. Not only just having the play-by-play in Spanish, not only having one or two things in Spanish a year, they got to be more proactive with the Central American community. We're very hard. We're very hard to get on.
I'm gonna give Maya a couple of pieces of advice right now. We got to have a Honduran night. We got to have a Salvadorian night. We can't be afraid of these things.
And
we got to ingratiate ourselves. We got to understand the culture. We got to learn the habits of what people want when it comes. And you know what? In a diverse city like Houston, there's no one size fits all. So you're going to have to be very flexible. You're going to have to be very, very creative, but it can happen. And guys like yourself and a lot of us have a lot of fantastic ideas that could be implemented if heard.
And there's very capable people in the Houston Dynamo organization. I think
no question.
I mean, they're very capable of pulling all these things, and doing all these things. We just got to get out there, And I'm always said, hey, if they need help reaching out to people, hey, here we are. We got to work as a team. I get it. It's not easy. I get it. We've lost, many years. We lost time. But hey, we can always get better, and we can always, do something to get to that community that we know they will support the team, because fans are very, very, they're very close to their teams. They're very close to soccer. So we just got to get out there. Once they go once, I bet you they will start going more often to the stadium.
And look at the attention that Houston has gotten during the Gold Cup. And I would say it's really because of the Honduran fans. Let's be honest here. It's the Honduran fans who've carried it here. That's the reason why it's in Houston, because we're making this the home for Honduras, because we know the drawing potential. But without a doubt, a full stadium brings attention. It brings coverage. It brings excitement. It looks better on television. It looks better to the people who are watching, who now say, hey, we want to go out. So, I think we're all tired of being in half empty stadiums down here.
Numbers don't lie, Glenn. And let me talk about numbers, because as I've worked with the Central American community for many, many years, being
correct,
Central American myself. There's just in Honduras alone, you have more than, I would say, 375,000 Hondurans here in Houston. You have more than 450,000 Salvadorians here in Houston. So there is no reason why we're not getting at least 5%, 10% of that in the stadium. Because
combined, about 750,000 Hondurans and Salvadorians.
Only Salvadorians and Hondurans. We're not even talking about
unbelievable.
Because Guatemalans, you have about, they say about 275,000 Guatemalans people.
Yeah.
Guatemalans here in Houston. So there's almost 1 million Central Americans here in Houston. Why are we not getting to that community? They have potential. They have cash. They work. They have cars. They have a house. They love soccer. They have kids.
Oh, and they'll earmark their money for the sport that they love. No question, right? No question.
And they want to see their, you know, they want to see their kids playing for a pro team. Why is the Houston Dynamo not going against, you know, not against, but not going for their kids? You know, hey, you know, have an academy, you know, all these things that they it can be done. Like I said, I know that Houston Dynamo people, they're very capable. They know the market and they're willing to do things. You know, we just got to work together, I think.
Has to be moved the needle, I think, a little bit more towards the diversity and ethnicity that we have here in Houston and authenticity when it comes to soccer fans. It just can't be, you know, going after Rocket fans and you know we've got to get authentic soccer fans to combine with the 20 to 35 year old, and the Dynamo are doing a good job of working that angle as well. So it's not one size fits all. Alex, anything else that has jumped out during this Gold Cup to you specifically?
Yeah, you know what? We got to mention it. And this is maybe something that we don't like to talk about, but referees, man. Oh, my God, the referees have been.
Don't we do that always with the Gold Cup, though?
I mean, they're always why do we always got to talk about refs when it comes to, you know, Gold Cup? I thought by having VAR, you know, there was going to be a different story. I was actually looking at the light at the end of the tunnel, but I don't see that right now. And I don't know why, you know, and hey, you know, you got to do things a little bit different, right? I mean, I've been saying since the tournament started, you know, I don't want to see and nothing against Caribbean refs, right? But they keep doing almost the same thing that even, you know, I was looking at Manrufo against in the Honduras against Qatar, you know, not that he was really bad, but he actually, you know, you can tell that he wanted to bother the Honduran national team. And you know, we got to stop that. You know, we got to be fair with other teams. We got to let, you know, the teams play. Soccer, it's a very physical sport. Of course, they're going to, you know, they're going to have, you know, they're going to hit each other. They're going to do all those things. And I think the referees, man, we got to do something.
But here's where I go on this, Alex, and this is a never-ending thing with refereeing. But CONCACAF is trying to integrate referees from all these different countries, and many of them are not getting high-profile, intense pressure-type games in Caribbean nations and things if they're doing their local leagues. So this is kind of the challenge, I think, the parallel is how do you integrate them? And then all of a sudden, somebody's in front of 22,000 Hondurans. You know, this is a whole different pressure. And the other thing is, and I've said this for many, many years, the definition of a foul in certain countries changes all over the world, okay? Yeah. All over the world. And that's why I don't know if it can ever be perfect. I just don't know if it can ever be perfect because a Salvadorian may look at a play and say that's a foul or it's not a foul as to a Honduran, as to a Brazilian, as to a Bulgarian. I mean, it's tough.
We're not asking to be perfect. We're asking just to be fair. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, sometimes it seems like, you know, the favorite teams, the strongest team, the teams with more money, with the most money are the ones to be in favor by the refs. And you know, we just want that to change. We just want them to know that we just want the teams to know they have a fair shot of, you know, of getting to a final, you know, not because obviously everybody said that the dream final is Mexico against USA, you know, and teams come to this tournament knowing that, you know, how do we change that perspective? You know, we just want the teams to know, hey, you have a fair shot of being in the final and not being hurt or, you know, or I don't know, hurt or overlooked by a ref.
Alex Benegas, Acción Central America. You can find him on Facebook and YouTube. Alex, great stuff. Safe flight out to Glendale. Enjoy the quarterfinals. Maybe we can get you on again and to talk about what you experienced out there. Thank you, as always, for coming on the show.
Always here for you, Glenn. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor, and I'm always here for you, man.
He's a great man. He's Alex Benegas. We'll take a break here. By the way, show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. All you got to do is, it's DaspitLaw.com. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. You might work in a refinery. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They have been putting soccer on the radio for years. You need to think about that when you deal with sponsors, no matter whose show it is. If they're putting money behind soccer, support them. Because it's our game, right? It's John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We're going to roll on.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We wrap it up here tonight. Also, for all of you listening on 92.5, big weekend for the Houston Dash coming up. They will take on Florence FC on Saturday. We've been giving tickets out during the show. Also, over on Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. So we're looking forward to the Dash at home after the win over North Carolina, and no better person to bring on than the person who scored the game winner off the free kick. Gabby Seiler joins us now. Gabby, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks for the wow factor against the North Carolina Courage. By the way, that's Paul Riley, my former teammate professionally. So you knocked off the Courage with that fantastic goal. You know, you and I were talking before we got on the air here about set pieces and the way you hid the ball in that moment. You know, you had two of your teammates hide the ball. Take me through it a little bit and how that may have been constructed during the practice sessions during the week.
Yeah, so obviously we have some girls who are missing who would normally be taking free kicks. And this week in training, we decided to go over some free kicks. And actually in training, we normally don't do them against each other. We'll do them like privately, or we'll work on them individually. But that week specifically in training, we actually practiced two of them live. And I remember specifically it was the last free kick before our training was over. And I struck it and I hit the post, almost scored. And everyone kind of looked around and they were like, "We didn't know you could do that." I'm kind of shocked just because, you know, obviously everyone has different roles and I just got asked to potentially take it because I'm left footed, and everyone kind of gave me that confidence after I took that free kick. So I feel like going into the game when we did get a free kick there, it was kind of like we'd been training it. I'd been practicing it and my teammates kind of all came up to me and they're like, "You're going to score. Like, I know you're going to score." And I normally probably wouldn't take a free kick from that side. I actually take them from the other side, but the angle was there and Shay and Emily both told me, like, "You're taking this and you're going to score." So
good advice. And obviously followed it. So you just said something really interesting that, you know, you struck that ball in training and nobody had seen that. And it kind of opened everybody's eyes and stuff. Are there moments as a professional soccer player for you where you're like, "Look, I need to stretch it here out of a little more than what the norm is"? In other words, you know, saying, "Hey, I want to take a free kick."
Yeah, I think I'm the kind of player in person, I normally wouldn't step up. I feel like someone would have to see something in me because sometimes I don't even see it myself. And actually, Twyla, our assistant coach, she actually had pulled me aside and she's like, "Hey, I want you to take these free kicks this week and, you know, see where it goes. Do you feel comfortable doing that?" And I, of course, said yes, because in club, I mean, I haven't really taken free kicks. I didn't really take free kicks in college, but in club, I took free kicks all the time. And I feel like people took advantage of me being left footed. So it was kind of nice, kind of gave me confidence again to know that I can do that. And it was kind of just luck too, just luck and timing. But I mean, yeah, that is kind of what happens sometimes when players step out and you have to step into a role. You're kind of given so many different roles, but you just kind of step into that. And if the coach and players have confidence, I feel like that's all you need.
Didn't look like luck to me. It looked like a lot of skill to me. It was a great goal. We're talking to Gabby Seiler, midfielder for the Houston Dash, played at Florida. As I mentioned to you, I called a lot of your games at Florida. You transferred from Georgia. Now, these are good, fantastic soccer programs. Tell me a little bit about the transfer in college, because I remember you from calling games in the SEC when you were at Florida.
Yeah, I grew up in Georgia. I was born in, well, I wasn't born, born and raised. I was raised in Georgia. And I really went to Georgia because I'm a homebody. I love being close to home. I love being close to my parents and my family. So that was part of my reason for going there. And obviously they had a good program. And then after 2 years, I kind of realized that maybe I want to try to play pro after. And we had some turnover with our coaches. So I had, you know, thought about potentially going to Florida, and one of my former club teammates, Savannah Jordan, she played with me in club and she went to Florida. So I'd kind of reached out to her before I even made a decision saying, do you think this would even be possible? And kind of just went with my gut and knew that I needed a change and knew that I needed to be in an environment where I was going to be challenged every day. I was surrounded by so many good players, and Becky is obviously an amazing coach, and she saw something in me. And so having that belief from Becky really helped get me to this point today too.
Yeah, Becky, a historic coach at Florida. And of course, Savannah Jordan. I mean, those games I was calling, she was out there as well. Exceptional soccer player as well. We're talking to Gabby Seiler of the Houston Dash. Hope the Dash fans like this. All right, biggest influence in your career growing up. You know, when did that light go off in your head that just said, you know, this is my game. It's soccer. I love this sport. I want to take it as far as I can.
Yeah, I mean, I specifically remember going to a women's professional game when I was younger. It was actually an Atlanta Beat game. And this may be weird, but Brianna Scurry was actually a really big influence. Just, I know she's a goalkeeper, but for some reason, I just really idolized her and I loved her mentality. I loved her mantra. Like, I just loved everything about her. And I remember meeting her. And I think from that moment on, I kind of realized I wanted to potentially be a pro soccer player and have those aspirations. Just, it was cool going to a women's professional game, even back then, like, going to the Atlanta Beat. I remember going with my dad, and it was, I don't know, it changed my life, really. It really opened my eyes to seeing these phenomenal women on the field and knowing that I could potentially do that.
Fantastic. Gabby Seiler joining us. How about from the coaching side of it?
From the coaching side, I think, oddly enough, probably Becky, just because she, not even what she did for me on the field with Alan and Vic, all of them, I mean, they all helped me in some way. But off the field, I think Becky really instilled a lot of belief in me that I maybe didn't have before. And she really wanted me to go for it, because I think I was a little bit skeptical about wanting to go pro, because obviously you don't make a lot of money. You don't really know what the future holds. I was coming off an injury. So she really wanted me to do it and not have any regrets. And so I think she's probably my biggest influence growing up, and just not growing up, but just with soccer in general and going pro.
Sure. So speak to that, you know, because every soccer player at some point, for the most part, is on the outside looking in of a first team or an opportunity or trying to make a national team or a pro team. How important is it when a coach gives you that elixir that is this thing called confidence?
Yeah. I mean, I think it can completely change your career path, honestly, because I mean, but also on the contrary, I think there's been coaches that I've played with, whether it's been in youth national teams, that have told me that I'll never make it pro. And those things also fueled me to want to make it pro and kind of prove them wrong. But, you know, having Becky and her influence alone was massive for me, and I think really changed my life and really changed my whole career path of wanting to play pro.
All right, let's talk about back to that free kick. Whose idea was it to hide the ball like that?
So that's just something that the Houston Dash do for free kicks. I think it's kind of been a thing that they do, and that's what our assistant coaches have set up for us. So that's, I mean, I haven't been super involved, so this is all new to me as well. But yeah, it's more our, that's just kind of some things that we do. I would say it's probably Twyla's idea, our assistant coach, but everyone contributes, I'm sure.
All right. So how has the integration been since you've come over to the Houston Dash?
It's been seamless, really. And that's probably just a testament to the girls on the team. They're really welcoming and loving and great people on the field, off the field. So for me, the transition's been really great. Everyone on the team has dogs, and that's been pretty great, because we all just, I feel like we spend most of our mornings talking about our dogs, which makes conversation easy. And, you know, it's easy to build relationships when you can just talk about your animals. So
what kind of dog do you have?
I have a golden retriever.
Oh, okay. I have a golden retriever mix.
Yeah. His name's Thor. So
he's and he great. Likes to swim, I'm sure.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Lives in water.
We're talking to Gabby Seiler here. We won't get off. We'll leave Cesar Millan to the dog talk, and we'll get it back to soccer here. Okay. This is going to be interesting on Saturday. Thorns FC coming to town. This is your former team. any extra motivation against them and just kind of your thoughts on playing against them?
Yeah, always. I mean, I think one, the Thorns are an incredible team, an incredible program. And they always have a target on their back because they're always good. And so I think everyone in the league wants to beat the Thorns always. And I know we want to be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league, obviously. So we know that beating Portland is a massive game. You know, we're going to play them. We've already played them, I think, twice, but we're going to play them a good amount. So I know each time we play them, it's super important. And we know how big this game is, especially being at home.
And by the way, I just wanted to mention the Becky we were referring to was a legendary college coach for those listening, Becky Burley of Florida. So just for full disclosure here, I realized I didn't mention her last name. So she's a coaching legend. That's for sure. What are some of the things that Dash need to produce and do against the Thorns this Saturday in order to be successful? Is it, you know, just continue with the consistency with some of the things you're doing, or are there things specific to this game that you think are important?
I think a lot of our same principles are the same, no matter who we're playing. I mean, I think we're a gritty team and we lay it all on the field, and it's super important that no matter technically, tactically, if things are going wrong, like, we're always going to, you know, be gritty and we're going to grind games out, even if it's not pretty sometimes. But I also think it's super important that we stay together collectively, defensively, and that we're really organized. I think we've grown massively since preseason with that. And I think we continue to grow on that. I feel like with North Carolina, we've set that bar really high, and I think we just have to continue to grow. And obviously there's things we can learn from North Carolina that we can take into this game, but I think it'll be a similar game as far as some of the tactics that we brought into North Carolina.
For you and some of the other women, is this a real opportunity here now to prove yourself out to a coach, to a fan base, to the league, when you've got so many players away at the Olympics?
Yeah, for sure. I think for what I've heard, people continue to doubt us, and no matter how many, no matter who we beat, no matter if we play well, people always doubt the Dash. So I think it gives us just an extra motivation to continue to prove people wrong. And I know all of us have that firepower in us of wanting to prove to everyone that we can be the best team, and we are the best team. We believe that. And I think that's kind of what fuels our fire when we step onto the field.
Gabby, rituals on game day, you know, everybody's got their things, certain things they like to do. I know dog walking's got to be one part of it, but outside of that, what else do you do on the game day, you know, from a ritual perspective to get you set up before you go to the stadium?
So this may be weird, but I'm not superstitious, because I have found that some things won't happen or won't go your way, especially like when you're on the road. Sometimes you may not be able to like eat a certain thing because you may not have access to that. So I'm not super superstitious, or I don't really have a lot of rituals. I feel like I'm routine oriented. Like I put my stuff on at certain times, and I get my ankle taped at certain times. So I guess that is kind of ritual, but I wouldn't say I'm like superstitious. Like, I don't have to put my left sock on, like nothing to that extent. But I just like to be organized on game day, and I like to just have all my ducks in a row. Because if I have to make my bed, actually, that's the one thing I have to do.
You're not burning any incense or shaking any snake tails or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
All right. Last one before I let you go, just on the league, you know, your thoughts on the league, having been in it, and where it's going and where it is right now. And, you know, take us a little deeper into, you know, where you think it projects out in the future. You know, because look, I see it as a lot of the leagues that I played in the 80s, you know, you're fighting for a piece of the sports landscape. You're fighting to grow the league. You're fighting for it to become even more professional, all these things. Your thoughts?
I think it can. I just actually watched the LFG movie with the women's national team players and on HBO Max. And I think sometimes it can be really exhausting, because you feel like you're fighting so many battles, whether if it's, you know, people not talking about women's sports, or if it's people just doubting women's soccer in general. I think sometimes it can be really frustrating, but also I try to look at the positives. I think there's been so much growth, and I think it's only going to continue to grow. And I mean, obviously, there's been professional women's professional leagues that have folded, but I really do think that this league is different. And I think all of us have this motivation to want to have this league around when we have kids. And we realize that we have such an impact and an influence. And I don't know. I mean, I think we all have that in the back of our heads, and we want to leave the league better than when we leave it. And so I don't know. I think we all think about that. And it's been really cool seeing the growth, even from my rookie year. And I know girls who have been in the league longer have said the same thing. They've seen so much growth in this league, and from what they got paid their rookie year to what they get paid now. I mean, even that alone, it's continuing to grow. So I think that's been really cool and unique, and just being able to see that from an outside and being in that NWSL now.
Excellent answer. Gabby, listen, best of luck against Thorns FC. Love the free kick. I think a lot of people love the free kick. It was a game winner as well, which is always a nice thing to add to it. And I thank you very much for coming on the show. Best of luck against the Thorns. We'll do it again, okay?
Thank you.
All right, that's Gabby Seiler, Houston Dash. You can catch her in action against the Portland Thorns. That'll wrap it up tonight here for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Remember, the podcast you get at ESPN975.com. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Instagram, Glenn Davis Stock. And until next week, remember, on behalf of the firm, Soccer Matters.
ESPN 97.5.